Today we're going to be starting on a new series on the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. I've given the series titled Genesis, Creation, Sin and Recreation, which if you've read the book is not very creative because it's just what happens. Genesis is the first of the 66 books of the Bible, 39 in the Old Testament, 27 in the New Testament. And Genesis 1 shows God as creator in all his glory, revealing his perfect world. And if we flip right back to the last chapter of the book of the Bible, Revelation 22, the last chapter is of God, our Saviour, in all his glory, having re-established perfection again. The whole Bible is about how do we get from the perfect creation to the new recreation. And actually, we're not at the end of the Bible yet, are we? We're not there yet. We're looking forward to that one day through faith. The Bible is made up of different books, and we believe that God used his servants to record his word to his people. His word to them was to enlist trust in God, always trust, to give hope, encourage them to faithfulness. And we see the books of the Bible are made up of many different types of writings. The word, if you've done any English, is the genres. We see narrative, which is stories about people's lives. We see poetry and genealogy, parables, gospels, history, prophecy, apocalyptic. And as we read any of these, we need to have a general understanding of all of these sorts of types of writings to understand what the author meant. We do not read a telephone book like a novel. I don't anyway, I don't know if you do. We don't read science fiction as if it's revealing to us what's happening in the cosmos, do we, in the universe. We have to be fair to the Bible and to allow it to mean what it's intended to mean. In Isaiah 55:12, it's a song that we often speak about where the mountains and the hills will burst forth into song and the trees of the field will clap their hands. This is poetic meaning, isn't it? Some might think that the hills are alive with the sound of music, but that's only people singing, isn't it? That's not the hills singing. To understand what is being said, we need to understand who was written for. And the majority of the first five books of the Bible, there's a technical term called the Pentateuch. You know, the first five books of the Bible. They were brought together for Israel, probably as they were about to enter the Promised Land. They were going to cross that Jordan, and there's Moses bringing all this together, telling them about what they need to know before they go into the Promised Land. They were about the only nation who worshipped one God. Every other nation worshipped the gods of the sun and the moon and the stars and the cows and the fields and the trees and the sea monsters and the ocean. Every other nation worshipped these as their gods, and it was seen as foolish for Israel to say there is only one God. That was foolishness. Before we truly understand what God might be saying to us from the passage, we need to try thinking, how would Israel have heard this? As they're about to go in the Promised Land, how would they have heard this? We need to understand how they communicated. One example is, in the very first chapter, we're going to come up against the heavens. The Bible talks about the heavens. And if I ask you, what does the heavens mean? We might have a couple of different answers here. And when the Bible in Genesis 1 particularly talks about the heavens, we're talking about the sky and the stars and all that's up there, because that's where God is. But you and I know what's up there. There's an atmosphere, isn't there? There's space. They didn't understand this. The Bible translators sometimes have trouble. Do we say this is the sky or the heavens? I think if we understand that, we can see that we can make sense of it. One of the big issues we will deal with is something that scientists cannot deal with. Why? Why are we here? What's your purpose in life? Scientists cannot go there. The best answer they can give you is that you're a big accident. Okay? There is no meaning. Just sit with that for a moment. Just think, well, if there's no meaning, why should I live at all? Like, if there is no purpose for life, and we're going to go through life, and we're going to struggle, and we're going to suffer, and we're going to just be in pain, well, why live at all? Why don't we short circuit it and just sort of not live at all? Science can't go where we're going to go, and we're going to ask the question why. So let's jump in, shall we? Genesis 1:1, we're going to read the first two verses of the Bible. Genesis 1:1-2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. We can firstly note that before God there was nothing. God was before time itself. God was who was in the beginning, before the beginning. He was the one who created in the beginning. It's good for us to remember that God is not limited by time. He created time. He's not limited by time. He's outside of time. God created. We believe God created nothing. We believe that God is the eternal one, that he had no start and no end, and that matter, you know, I'm talking about matter, creation, all the things that we're seeing around us, the start, everything, all this matter had a start. Many scientists who deny God, so what they're saying is that matter, all the things, the molecules, the atoms that are in existence, that they are eternal. Either God has to be eternal or matter has to be eternal. But often the scientists won't go there. But we are saying that God is the eternal one. And in chapter 1, verse 1, heavens and earth, I believe, refers to all of creation. It is the cosmos. It is the universe and all that's in it. When we focus on the earth in verse 1, it says it's formless and empty, an empty mass of water. Now, I just wonder, what do you picture that? A formless void of water. Now, you might, in your mind, start thinking about a globe, like we see, without the land. Oh, it's formless and sort of a bit of wibbly-wobbly sort of stuff because it's formless and void. But we are thinking, if you think that way, you're thinking like a 21st century person. We knew there was a globe, didn't we? But back then, there was a flat earth. They thought everything was flat. They did not understand that it was a globe. And we need to sometimes try to weed out our thinking as a 21st century person and how they would have understood it. So we have, and as in many things, like they believe the gods were in everything. And so when it talks about the deep, do you know there was one of the gods they worshipped? The deep and the ocean was one of the gods. But what do we see here? Is the deep something to be worshipped? No, it was created by our God. It was created. It was created chaotic. And then we see the Spirit of God is there, and God is going to bring order to chaos. And one of the things that we're going to see is God establishing order and purpose. He will assign creation their function, and they will operate in the right order. Because God will establish the function, the order. It's hard to draw a formless earth, but I've managed to do it. Maybe. Imagine this. Imagine, this is not terribly inspired, so please don't sort of, imagine this, is what we have here is a formless void of water. That's why I did it blue. Okay, so we've got this formless void, there's chaos, there's no order about it. So with that in mind, let's read on. Genesis 1:3. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. All this is happening simply because God spoke. He expresses his will, and it happens. Other creation stories of the time, the Egyptians, they were in Egypt, or in Babylon, they would have heard about how the gods were in fierce battle with one another, cutting up each other, and that's how the different parts of the world came about. But our God does not do battle. How does he do it? He speaks. He expresses his will. And he gives everything its function to do its purpose. We will see God separating things, contrasting and naming them. First is light and darkness. He calls them day and night. And with that, we get a bit of a clue. It's not just light and darkness that he's talking about here, I believe, for the sun's not even yet made. Dark and night are the most basic measures of time. So I think that what we're seeing here is God establishing time. So I've got another little picture of representing God bringing some order to the formless void, establishing time. Some order there from the void. Let me read on, chapter 1, verse 6. And God said, "Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it is so. And God called the expanse sky. It could be heavens, but sky here. And there was evening and there was morning the second day. The ancient world thought that land floated on water and that the skies and the heavens had water in them too. There was a big band of water. They did not know about evaporation. They did not know about the rain cycle. They made sense of things the best way they could by observation. I want to read it's from a book, this guy named John Walton, who's an Old Testament scholar. He said their world is based on what they could observe from their vantage point, just as ours is. Now, imagine this, if water comes down, this is their thinking, if water comes down, there must be some up there. So they thought in terms of cosmic waters in the sky. If it doesn't come down, something must hold it back. So it was common to think that there was something solid up there, a vault, a dome, they thought, was over there. If there was something solid holding back the water, something must hold up the firmament. So they thought of mountains and ropes and tent poles. Water comes down from the ground, so there must be water under the ground. So there must be something holding the ground steady. The ancient world thought there was a dome, a firmament is the word that the old King James uses, holding back the waters above, and at night showed the stars, it carried the stars. They thought it was something like this. That there was waters above, that there was an expanse. The Old Testament people have trouble using a word. They use a vault sometimes. They use a firmament. And so there's a separation of the water above and water below. And this was an understanding of the day. The expanse, or let me use the word environment, can be represented in this next picture. That God is separating out. So here we have the time, we have the environment. Let me read on verse 9. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and gathered waters he called seas. So we see God separating, God dividing and naming, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to the various kinds," and it was so. And the land produced vegetation, plant-bearing seed according to their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seeds in it according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, there was morning, a third day. So land and food is now commanded and it comes into being. Have you noticed that it's been always all good? I think by good, God is saying, that's just the way I want it. It's functioning just the way I want it. It's in order. Now we have land and vegetation. Hopefully you agree that something's going to happen here. It's moving towards somewhere. So let's get another picture up to talk about our, this is our habitat and the food. The third circle. And so far we have the big categories of time, we have environment, we have habitat and food created. You see, they understood the world to look like this.
Next one.
That the land was raised apart from the seas, and the firmament, that dome, they thought that the moon and the stars actually travelled on that. They did not understand that about space. They didn't understand about distance. They thought that this dome had the sun and the moon, and so in the Psalms it talks about the sun coming from its tent and going across the firmament, its path. And we have, so now we have these three pictures. Next, Bill, please. Oh, it's next verse, sorry, yeah. So verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years, and let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was morning, there was evening, and there's evening and there's morning, the fourth day. If we go back to day one, talk about time, what was needed to work as God intended. The next picture, please. Here we have time. What is needed? We need day four. What's day four give us that connects into the time? We have things like the sun and the moon and the stars. And do you notice it doesn't even mention the word sun and moon? It says, what does it say? Big light, little light. You've got to remember they're gods. Ra, the Egyptian god of the sun. But he is not even mentioned except for his function, big light. And the moon was another Egyptian god, only mentioned by little light. And what do we learn here? That God creates them, and he gives them a job. You look after the day, you look after the night. What about the stars who are all worshipped? You look after... You tell people when the seasons come, when sun and summer and winter and autumn. So we have something like this. For day one to operate, we need the stars, we need the sun, and we need these things to give us time. Big light, little light, and they are good. Verse 20. God said that the waters teem with living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth, across the expanse of the sky. So God created the created being creatures, created the great creatures of the sea and everything living and moving thing that with which the waters teem according to their kinds. And every winged bird according to its kinds. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful, increase in number, and fill the waters of the sea, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. Let's go back to a day two creation, which was the environment. What is needed for the environment to work well as its function? What is needed? We need the next one, which is the birds of the air and the fish of the sea. You see, God is separating and he's filling it. He's giving it purpose. He's giving it names. He's creating a world. Verse 24. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kind, livestock, creatures, and that move across the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kind, the livestock according to their kind, and the creatures that moved along the ground according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. And then God said, let's make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock and over the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth, subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God shall give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They'll be yours for food. And to the beast, to all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds of the air, and the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has breath in it, of life in it, I've given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw what he made, and it was very good. And there was evening, there was morning, the sixth day. Back to the habitat and food of day three. What's needed to fill this out? Well, we've read it, haven't we? We need livestock, we need animals, and we need human beings. We're going to be looking at human beings next week, so I'm not going to be touching too much on that. But that's not the end of the story, okay? We often leave it there. But let's read on verse 21. Chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all his work and creating that he had done. The temptation is for you and I to think, well, I understand what it's like. 6 days of hard work, boy, it's nice to have a sleep in on that day, isn't it? Boy, I'm tired. God was not tired, okay? God wasn't tired. He didn't need a rest. He didn't need a holiday. We often think that way because we feel that way. But what we see here is God sitting on his throne. We're seeing his temple is made. Creation is his temple. He sits down and he rules creation. He no longer has to change things from chaos to order. He rests. Let me give you a couple of examples of that word rest being used that way. 2 Samuel chapter 7 verse 1. After the king had settled in his palace, and the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies around him. You see what I mean? It's not, boy, I need a rest, I'm tired. Things have been put in order. He can now rest. Oh, let me turn your mind to Isaiah 66 chapter 1 and 2. Verse 1 and 2, Isaiah 66. God talking about a temple made by human hands in Jerusalem. He says, this is what the Lord says. Heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. I think we need to get that from Genesis 1. Where is the house you will build me? Where is my resting place? Where will my resting place be? Has not my hand made all these things? And so they came into being, declares the Lord. I think when Israel would have read chapter 1 and verse 2, chapter 2 of this account, they would see that God has entered his rest. He's ordered creation the way he wanted it. He's brought function to it. And now he can rule as the monarch, the sovereign, the Lord over all that he made. He was in his temple. And he can now cease his work there. The whole purpose, I think, of Genesis 1 and 2 is this, day 7. It's us worshipping God. Things are in order, everything's in a place. Now God rests, he sits on his throne, and we can all enter into praise and the glory of God. I think day 7 is the whole focus of this account. If we miss this, we miss the purpose. It's like a mechanic. Imagine a mechanic building a car. He puts all the engine in, he's repaired the engine, he's done the whole engine up. He puts all the running gear in, he does the gearbox, the paint works immaculate, the electrical works fine, everything works just as it should, as the design. Everything's perfect. It's complete. He polishes the car. If he doesn't take it for a drive, the function of the car is useless. There is no function for the car. If you don't drive the car, I think for us, if we think just the 6 days of creation, and that's the whole purpose, we've missed day seven, which is the actual purpose. It's to bring us to worship God, our Creator. It's to focus us on what is really important, the worship of God who makes the world, who gives it order, who gives us purpose. What we see in Genesis 1 is the world as God intended it. And a few verses in chapter 2, we see the reason. Our reason for existence is to bring glory to God. I think Israel needed to know this. They were going into the promised land. They were going to be the representatives of God Most High. He was establishing His order in the land. Israel needed to hear this. And I think we need to hear this today, because we're looking forward to the day where we're going to go into that promised land. But what are we going to do in the meantime? We're going to do the work of God. We've joined God in His rest. We acknowledge Jesus as the King. And this is the whole reason why Genesis 1 and 2, I think, is so important for us to understand our place in the world. This is our inheritance that we're talking about. One of the things I would have loved to have done is to read the whole account. Time doesn't permit. It's a beautiful account. Go home, read Genesis 1:1 to 2:3, and enjoy the beauty of the way that it's been put together. And it's the beauty, I would hope, would inspire you to worship our God, our Creator. Let's just pray.